We're doing the book of Shoftim, and we're up to what's called the fourth chapter. The Jewish people continued sinning. Ehud had passed away, and God gave them into the hands of Yavin, the Canaanite king. He was king in an area called Chatzor, and he had a chief general named Sisra. Now, Sisra was an unusually powerful general, so much so that our sages had on tradition that even without his whole army, if only he was around, he could amass an army that would be a tremendous threat to the Jewish people. So he was a brilliant leader and a tremendous danger for us. So we have the king, Yavin, we have the army, and we have a chief general who is a tremendous danger. And the Jewish people call out to Hashem. They attacked them with 900 metal chariots, which was a show of strength in those days. And for 20 years, they're oppressing the Jewish people. And we have a woman who is a prophet, and her name is Devorah. And our sages say that the Pasuk describes her as Eshet Lapidot, the wife of the torches. Our sages say either it means she was like swift like a torch, like you'd say, he's lightning. Or it means that she used to prepare the wicks for the temple, for the menorah and the temple, the fires that were in the temple. And those everyone remembers from Hanukkah time, preparing wicks is like this filthy job that no one wants to do. You know, the first night of Hanukkah, it's a lot of fun. You put in the wicks and everything's ready. The next night, when you got to deal with the oily wicks and everything else, it's not so much fun. By the eighth night, when you're dealing with all the wicks with all the ash, and it's not so much fun. But she prepared the wicks, and in those days, it meant really spinning the wicks. She prepared the wicks for the temple, and that was her great merit. And she was a prophetess, which means she was a tremendous tzaddikess. And she judged the Jewish people in that time. So she was the chief rabbi. Here you have a woman who was the leader, Devorah. And she was judging the Jewish people. And then you run into questions, you know. You don't want people to talk. So she would ensure that there'd be no room for anyone to talk. She'd sit under the shade of a palm tree. You guys ever sit under the shade of a palm tree? You know how a palm tree grows. Not too many leaves. The idea of sitting under the shade of a palm tree was that there was no shade. That there was no way any hanky-panky could happen. She'd sit under a palm tree, and this way everyone could always see what was going on. There were no side rooms, no offices, no nothing. She's a woman. The men are coming to her with their halachic questions. They're coming with their religious questions. So in order to ensure that everything was on the up and up, she would sit under a palm tree. You guys look around at the palm trees. You know how they grow. And only at the very top of the palm tree you have branches coming out. She'd sit under a palm tree where there was no shade and no room for, you know, you'd sit on one side of the palm tree. You get the shade of the trunk and that's about it. But this way there'd be no room for anyone to even think that something improper was going on. She's guiding the Jewish people. And she sends word to a man by the name of Barak ben Avinoam, which according to some commentaries was her own husband. And he was from the tribe of Naphtali in the north. And she said to him, God has commanded you, gather with you 10,000 soldiers from the tribe of Naphtali and their neighbors, the tribe of Zebulun. And I will cause Sisra to come out towards you, towards the valley of Kishon, with his masses. And God has said that you will be victorious. And when a prophet tells you to do something, there's a mitzvah to listen. And Barak tells her, if you come with me, I'll go. If you come with me, I'll go. And if you don't go with me, then I won't go. Now that's not the right answer. Well, he's supposed to be the chief general. And he's telling her, look, for 20 years we've not been successful against them. If you're telling me to go, you come with me and I'll go. Then the people who listen to me, they'll come. Okay, that was an error. What? We're up to what's called the fourth chapter, the ninth pasuk. So she says, okay, I'll go with you, but now you've lost it. You should have gone out to war. You should have shown you're brave. You should have been the chief general. But no, you didn't. So you're going to see that if you've forgone the glory, then God will really take the glory from you. And Sisra the general of the Canaanites, will not be defeated by you. There will be a woman who will win this war. So she goes with Barak, and Barak gathers the tribe of Zebulun and Naphtali, and with 10,000 men, they go on the attack. Now, here, when they go on the attack, so the story over here is really divided. If you want the full story, you get it piecemeal. Part of the story is here, and after they're victorious, so then Devorah sings a song in praise of God, in honor of the victory, and from within that song, we see that we see a lot more details of what really happened here. So, I guess we'll learn it the way the Navi describes it, and then we'll piece together the story. Or maybe we should we film the story? Should we do it like in order? Yes. Okay, so maybe she composed the song, and we have the song. We don't know that she sang it publicly.
Okay. So there's a female rabbi.
What?
A female rabbi.
Well, we had females in our history who were very, very learned, and she was one of them. King Saul's daughter was a big tzaddikah. She used to wear tefillin every day. Shulchan Aruch says no woman today should do that.
There's a difference between being a tzaddik and being a
rabbi. That's true. King Saul's daughter, Michal. Yeah. I don't know of a valid source for that. You know, we hear that. No, I also heard that. No, Rashi's daughters. That's what I heard too, but I don't know what the source of that. So we rule that women shouldn't put on tefillin. It's not prohibited, but it's not recommended. We ourselves minimize the amount of time we put on tefillin. Once upon a time, people were more pious. So then people wore tefillin throughout the day. Today, we're not on that level. So we minimize it. We wear it just for Shmoneh Esrei and just for Shacharis. We say, we do the minimum that we have to, because this is such a holy mitzvah. If we didn't have to, we wouldn't touch it either. So women, they don't have to. So, you know, you're playing with fire. We ourselves have a hard time doing it. We do it to the minimum. We do what we have to do. So for women, the recommendation is they shouldn't do it. If a woman does it, she's not in transgression of anything. You know, she's going against the recommendation of a Shulchan Aruch, but okay, it's not like an Aveira, you know. It's maybe against the spirit of the law. It's against, yeah.
So, I mean, I know the custom that that women shouldn't even touch it from...
That women?
That women shouldn't touch it from at all. Like, even hold it in their hands from, like, 9 through 50, 60, whatever it is.
Oh, yeah. Never heard of that. I hear.
So it's a custom, it's not like we're going to hold.
I am unfamiliar with the custom either.
Okay.
So they're going to war, and the Jewish people are not very united in this war. As we will see in the song, you had tribes, you had a man named Meroz, who lived right next to the side of the war, and he didn't think he should join the war.
Alien?
Yes. What do you mean by an alien? Ah, so one understanding of the Talmud is that it was a star, not people from a star, a star. But I wasn't going with that understanding. There are two understandings in the Talmud, but okay. That understanding can be quoted in a minute when guys understand what role the stars played in this war. So we're going to war, and the Jews on the eastern side of the Jordan, they figured we could run. The Jews in the tribe of Dan that lived on port cities, they all were ready on the ships. They figured if we lose this war, we could run. Asher, the tribe of Asher that also lived in a port city, they also gathered their families by the ports, ready to run. Who went to war over here? The tribe of Zebulun, the tribe of Naphtali. They went to war. With other tribes, They weren't so unified here. One after another, they're ready to run because they didn't think they'd win. So in her song, she's going to rebuke them. So Sisera comes to attack. Dvorah tells Barak, get up, because today God gave him in your hand. Hashem is ahead of you. You're going to win. And Barak comes down from Mount Tabor with 10,000 men, and God stuns the camp. Here they were in a valley, and God suddenly makes the water flow through that valley, and there are torrents of water that suddenly come running through that valley and wash away Sisera and his camp. We didn't even have to fight the war. God had the stars come down. It says that the enemy nations, the kings of Canaan, came to join the war. God said, you guys are coming to join for free, so I'll take my army that comes for free. And God sent stars, started shooting down and joined the war in whatever way they fought the war. So Chazal say that Meiroz, according to one opinion, was not a baron who lived nearby who could have joined the war and decided not to, but rather it was a star that the other stars that were near him started shooting down. And Meiroz, this star, he decided he's not joining the fight. Why should he fight Sisera? So in her song, Dvorah is going to curse him. And we have a great victory. We destroy the camp of Sisera. And Sisera is on the run. Now, if you remember, Moshe's father-in-law, Yisro, he had left us and went to get his family. And his family, when they came back, they didn't have a right to any portion in the land. So they were nomadic tribes. They lived in tents. And they lived next to where Sisera's camp was, and they were on friendly terms with the Canaanites and with Sisera and his men. So Sisera is running to, and he comes upon a tent of Yoel, the wife of Chever, who Chever was from Yisro's family. And there was peace between them. It seems like they weren't treated like Jews. So even though the Jews are at war with Sisera, the family of Yisro had peace. There was peace between them, and they were buddy-buddy with this Canaanite kingdom. And Yoel comes out to greet Sisera, and she says, come to me, don't worry. He comes to her tent, and she gives him to eat and to drink, and she's intimate with him. And then he asks for water. She gives him milk. She knows that there's serotonin, and she's going to put him to sleep. And after she's worn him down, this great warrior, he's in a deep slumber. And before he falls asleep, he tells her, look, honey, if anyone comes, you say that there's no one here. And she goes and she takes the spoke and she takes the hammer and she puts the spoke of the tent by his temple and she bangs down with the hammer and kills him. Some lady. She didn't take a sword. That would be immodest. She was just intimate with another man. So that she did to save the Jewish people. She's a married woman. You know, a married woman, for her that's adultery. Here Chazal tell us this concept of Avera Lishma. That sometimes a person has a sin before them, and if their intent is completely 100%, we don't know what it means to have complete 100% intent. But great people like Yoel, they could have perfect intent for the sake of heaven. Yoel knew that Sisera was still a danger for the Jewish people, and Chazal says she was right, that had she not killed Sisera, he could have easily amassed another army, and he was at least as great a threat as the whole army we had conquered. And so Chazal applauded her. Not only Chazal, Dvorah in her song says she praises Yael from the women of the tent. Who are the women of the tent? The most modest women in Jewish history. Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah, they're the women of the tent. They were so modest, you wouldn't see them out of the tent, as we discussed earlier, right? Sarah, Ineba, Oel. You have three nobles, three Arabs coming to Avram's house. Sarah's in the tent. And Yoel, who you'd think is the epitome of the exact opposite, so that's why in the Song of Devorah we are reminded, no, She's blessed like the women of the tent. Yes.
What about the wife of Pelek? That she wasn't tent, but she showed her hair.
What about her?
She showed her hair, and that's when you're forbidden to enter the tent.
That's also praise. Yeah.
She wanted to protect her husband.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that she showed her hair to everybody.
She didn't show her hair to everybody. She was at the entrance of the tent. They came and they saw the hair. Yeah.
So, did you say it was in Mars for her to pick up the sword?
Yes.
Why?
We read in last week's parsha that men should not wear women's garb and women should not wear men's garb. So a sword is considered a man's garb. So the Targum over here points out that out of modesty, she didn't take a sword. She took the spoke. Chazal say, the simple understanding is she didn't know if he'd wake up. If he'd wake up, she could say, honey, I needed you to put the spoke of the tent back in. I guess she could say that till she was digging the spoke into his temple. But it saved her precious time. It was less danger. And yet the Targum says this reason. There was a question center of Moshe Feinstein about whether women in the Yeshuvim could walk around with guns, or maybe they should walk around with spokes like Yoel, right? So obviously they weren't talking about walking around with spokes, but the one who asked the question said, what about this over here that you see? Even it's such a big danger, and yet she's praised for finding a way to kill him that would not transgress this concept. She did whatever she could to go in line with Halacha. So he said, yeah, right, but a small gun in the purse and stuff. He discusses over there that the women in the Yeshuvim, if it's necessary, they should still go around with guns.
Simcha? Is it every interpretation that says that she was intimate with them? Are there any that say that maybe...
The simple reading is that she wasn't. The Gemara, the Talmud tells us that it repeats numerous times that she covered him. So the Talmud says, why does it keep saying she covered him? To tell us that she was intimate with him more than once, whatever it took to wear him down. That's what the Talmud understood from the fact that it keeps saying that she covered him. It says in Pasuk Yud Ches, it says she covered him with the blanket. And then in Pasuk Yud Tes, it says she gave him to drink and she covered him again. And then it says... Those are the two times it says she covered him. So Chazal say, why does it keep saying she covered him? Because it wasn't only with a blanket that she covered him.
So even if she sinned?
Well, don't try this at home, right? You have to be as I'm saying. This is like someone as great as Yoel. Chazal tell us you have to be a giant. Reb Tzadok HaKohen, in his work on Rosh Hashanah, one of the concepts he develops over there is he says, even on something like this, where Chazal applaud Yael, even in Avera Lishma, even that requires tshuva. Even that, on the one hand, she did what was right, the Jewish people were in danger, and here, even though this is a mitzvah that a person should rather give up their life for, nonetheless, she did what was right, and yet, there's still an aspect of tshuva. Don't forget, there's a difference between a man and a woman. When it comes to adultery, a woman is considered to be inanimate, like she's not doing anything. He's the active one. Just like Esther, she was a married woman. Why didn't she give up her life when Ahasuerus abducted her? Why didn't Sarah give up her life when she was abducted? Right? They're married women, and adultery is one of the averus that a person should rather give up their lives for. So the Talmud says there's a difference between being passive and being active. Man, when he commits adultery, is usually active. A woman, when adultery is being committed with her, can be passive. Just 1 second, someone's waiting, sorry. Yeah. Simra. No, yeah.
So, but in this point, you hear is if you should rather die if there are a minion present,
Even without a minion. Yeah.
And I have a question. This is one of the questions I asked you Thursday about killing the High Council of Begadish and Begadish. So you're saying that the sword was considered as begadish. So I ask you about razor, something that women would use and men could use on their body or whatever. Something that's not clothing. So you said it's perispo. So can we comply with this?
I have to look. It's a good point. I have to look. I don't know.
I remember.
You're right. You're right.
Because there are some razors for women.
I hear.
Just give an example of razors because you're not.
I hear. I have to look. It's a good question. If you could email me and remind me, I'd appreciate it. So Barak is chasing, and Yael comes out to greet him, and she says, come, I'll show you the man you're looking for. And he comes, and he sees Sisera falling dead, and he's got a spoke going through his head, through his temples. And on that day, we subdued the Canaanite king, and we kept getting stronger until we finally kicked them out. And then Devorah sings her famous song together with Barak. She says when things went bad and then the Jewish people volunteered to do tshuva, things got better, and for that we have to bless Hashem. Listen, kings, listen, leaders. I am going to sing before Hashem. Hashem, the God of Israel. When Hashem marched through the different kingdoms, everything trembled until the mountains melted. Sinai melted before God, and then you had the period of Shamgar ben Anat, the days of Yoel, when people were scared of traveling because you couldn't travel the straight path. We'd constantly be attacked by the enemies. People were scared of living in open cities. They'd fortify their cities until I came around Dvorah, I, the mother in Israel. And Chazal say that as great as she was, this one line that she says, till I came to the scene, had a slight element of immodesty. And that's why Chazal say she lost her prophecy after the song. She begs Hashem later on in the song, give it back, please give me prophecy. But no, Chazal say, lo yai, lo nae yehuta lenashaya. It doesn't bode well for women when they're in positions of leadership. Even Dvorah, who was so pious, and she was a great leader, and she led us to victory, it got to her. You see, she had this slight haughtiness. You know, she was much greater than we are, you know, way beyond our perception. But there was a slight element of haughtiness, and Chazal say that's because she was in a position of leadership. We have another example of Huldah, the prophetess, that when the king sends her word, so she also is slightly immodest. She says, tell the man who sent you. That's the way you talk to a king, but tell the man who sent you. So Chazal say again, there was something slight, but nonetheless, it was there. So that's not to say that men aren't always, that the men don't make mistakes, but Chazal saw that this point went hand in hand, that when a woman gets the position of leadership, then the haughtiness gets in her way. Yeah? She said, everything went bad till I came to the scene. Till I arose to the scene. She was taking credit for herself. Again, it's a nuance. You and me, maybe we'd be tzaddikim if we'd say a sentence like that. You know, on her level, this was something that was held against her. Yeah, but Salen.
So it was dafka that word, that expression that will take her...
I think so. I think that's what it says.
So here is an example of men that did the same thing.
Well, Chazal say Moshe Rabbeinu also. The fact that he said to the tribe of Levi, Rav Lachem B'nei Levi, God held that against him. Okay, so she describes the great victory and she describes the war, as we said earlier, and how the Jewish people reacted. She describes how the Canaanite kings came for free, and so God sent his free army, the stars, and how the stream of Kishon, they went in the Kishon Valley, and God made the Kishon Valley suddenly filled with water. Streams came flowing through it and washed away the armies there. She blesses Yael from the women in the tent, and she describes how Sisera was between her legs. This also seems to be indicative of this. Simcha and Pasuk Chaf Zayin. She describes how he bent over between her feet, and that also seems to be an intimate description. And then she concludes her song. She describes the mother of Sisera, who's sitting by the windowsill waiting for her son, the chief general, to return. And she's saying, why is he being detained? Why hasn't he yet returned from the war? And her wise mistresses, her wise women tell her, don't worry, they probably have too much loot, there are too many women to rape, and that's why they're not back yet. You see a woman who has zero compassion for other women. That's how they comfort her. There are probably too many Jewish girls. That's why each one of them is being detained and they're not back yet. That's the comfort they tell Sisera's mother. Our sages say that Sisera's mother wept. And as wicked as she and her son were, when a person weeps, that has an impact in heaven. And on some level, that weeping had an impact in heaven, and we blow 100 blasts on Rosh Hashanah. Chazal say we're trying to counteract Sisera's mother's weeping. So you ask yourself, well, what Sisera's mother's weeping? So obviously there are deep secrets of Torah here. But we have to know that even a wicked person, when they weep, there's a special weight in heaven for someone's tears.
So it's like the mother of suicide bombers, like... So what happened with the mother of suicide bombers? That they cry, they're happy, they're partying.
I don't know. You know, where Chazal told us, we know. Where they didn't tell us, I don't know.
What do you mean, what happens?
Yeah, the mother of suicide bombers, they cry over their sons, although they were happy.
I don't know. We have 40 years of peace. And again, the Jewish people sin, and Hashem gave them in the hands of the Midianites. The Midianites were nomadic tribes. Remember, Midian was one of Abraham's descendants. Avram, one of the children he had from his second marriage, from Keturah, was Midian. And the Jewish people are being plagued by the Midianites. They joined forces with Amalek and all the tribes of the east, and they'd come in with tremendous armies, and they'd take anything they could find. So the Jewish people couldn't stand up to that force, so they started making caves in the mountains and different fortifications, but it didn't work. The Jewish people were being impoverished by the Midianites, and after 7 years, they call out to Hashem, and Hashem sends a prophet who tells them, you know, I took you out of Egypt, I took you out of slavery, I saved you, I did everything, and I told you don't serve the idols, I am your God. And you didn't listen. So, nonetheless, it's the morning after Pesach. It's the morning of Pesach. And an angel comes to Ophrah, to the eastern side of the Jordan, to Gidon's father. And this young man named Gidon, he's been trying to thresh the wheat to hide it from the Midianites. And the angel shows up in human form and says to him, God is with you. And here we see that in heaven already, they felt that people should be greeting one another with God's name. When we say, Shabbat Shalom, Shalom Aleichem, what are we saying? God, whose name is peace, should be with you. Now this was an institution a few years later. But as with many institutions, in heaven they showed an indication in advance that they agreed with this institution. So here, Gidon is being greeted by the angel with God's name. God should be with you. The same holds true when the rabbis changed the alphabet. So then when the godly hand appears in the book of Daniel and writes on the wall of the Babylonian king Belshazzar, Mene Mene Tekelu Parsin, when it writes that secret code, it writes it with the new alphabet that Ezra is going to institutionalize. In heaven, they're already using the new alphabet that the rabbis, that we use in our Sefer Torah today, that the rabbis instituted then. So here too, the angel appears and he greets Gidon and he says, God is with you, O brave one. And Gidon says, yeah, if God's really with us, why are we in such a lot? I have to be hiding over here in the olive press, and this is where I have to thresh the wheat, and all our food is being taken by the Midianites. You know, last night my father told me all the stories of the miracles of Egypt, and now I don't get it. If we're pious, let God save us in our own merits. If we're not pious, then our forefathers, you know, God save them, we should save us in their merits. So what's going on here? So God appears to him. Prophecy. God tells him, that's a very good claim. Now you've turned the tide. With that claim, I'm going to save the Jewish people. And here we see an important point. Sometimes if you find an original way to raise your prayers before God, that can change the tide. So, go save the Jews from the Midianites. I've sent you. So Gidon says, God, tell me, how am I going to do it? I'm from a small part of the tribe. I'm the youngest in my father's family. God says, yeah, because I will be with you. The same line that God tells Moshe when Moshe says, how am I going to do it? And you'll see, you'll kill the Midianites as though they were one individual. The Midianites were huge numbers. So Gideon says, okay, God, please give me a sign. So Gideon takes out an offering, and when he makes the offering, so the angel tells him, take the meat and the matzos and pour the gravy over them. And when they do that, when he does that, the angel extends his staff and he touches all of it, and a flame shoots up from the rock and consumes all of it, and the angel disappears. And then Gideon realizes, hey, that was an angel. And he says, wait a second, I just spoke to an angel. And God tells him, peace will be with you, don't worry. He sets up an altar, and at that moment he declares that God's name is Shalom. Until today, he called that altar Hashem Shalom, God is peace, and that remains with us till today. And we'll pick up here, Be'ezrat Hashem, with how Gideon advances in saving the Jewish people. We'll pick up here, Be'ezrat Hashem, next week.